The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to The Christian Outlook, a weekly radio program that sorts through the issues in our fast-changing world in a way that honors your Christian faith. It's brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF. They're the Alliance Defending Freedom. My name is Kevin McCullough. This week, the Super Tuesday surprise. Joe Biden is back.
This is your campaign!
We'll get analysis from Martha McCallum.
I don't think anybody anticipated the strength of Joe Biden's comeback.
And Charlie Kirk looks at Biden as the potential nominee.
No one's excited to vote for Joe Biden.
Plus, abortion before the Supreme Court.
The state of Louisiana is arguing that abortion clinics and abortion doctors should not be recognized to have what is called third-party standing.
And a threat from Senate Minority Leader Schumer.
I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price.
Plus concerns over coronavirus.
It is a very serious health threat.
All this and more. I'm Kevin McCullough, your host, coming to you from my home station in New York City, where you can hear my program live each weekday afternoon on AM 570 and FM 102.3, The Mission, and also AM 970, The Answer. Take a moment to follow me and Christian Outlook on Twitter. My handle is at KMC Radio. Christian Outlook is at TC Outlook. Great to be with you. We'll begin with Super Tuesday. At least up until the South Carolina primary on February 29th, there was a widespread belief that the candidacy of Joe Biden was pretty much dead. Then, of course, the former vice president had a convincing win. A late-night phone call from President Barack Obama ensued, and on Tuesday, Biden dominated the evening, gaining 380 delegates, winning in 10 states, and taking the lead, albeit small, in overall delegates. As the nation was sorting through results, I turned to Martha McCallum, familiar to many of you as host of The Story on Fox News Channel and who had anchored Fox News's coverage the night before. You saw it all unfold. Did it go the way you had kind of thought it was going to go?
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody anticipated the strength of Joe Biden's comeback. I mean, you can look back to a couple of pivotal points now with hindsight and sort of look at the moment when Bernie Sanders started talking about the wonderful attributes of literacy programs under Castro. Yeah, and, you know, then you can also go over to Joe Biden and look at the Clyburn endorsement. It's, you know, it's, what's interesting, one of the things that I would just say as an aside there, over the last several cycles, endorsements haven't really meant all that much. But when there's a key endorsement that is so genuine and sincere as James Clyburn, Representative James Clyburn was of Joe Biden, that he still had faith in him. That was essentially what he said. I still have faith in Joe Biden, right, and I think he can lead us. And, you know, I think it just shifted. And when you look at that, that's why covering politics is so fascinating, because you can sort of look at these moments when there's a little subtle shift and people go, you know what, I'm not really sure that, you know, I want someone who thinks that Castro has some positive qualities, and Joe Biden, somebody that we've known well for a long time.
Well, as somebody who broadcast from New York and has seen the impact of the squad, particularly with AOC in my backyard, but also Ilhan Omar and some of the more progressive forces that have come to power since Bernie's first run in the 18th cycle, I kind of was encouraged that on some level, one of our great political parties isn't absolutely being destroyed by progressive socialism. And there's some people that still care about it. Now, to what degree that's going to remain in future cycles, I don't know. But I walked away kind of going, huh, maybe we're not as far gone down that path as I felt that we might have been.
Well, you know, I think there have been a number of observers of the Democratic Party who have been sort of saying this to their credit all along, you know, that all the hype surrounding the squad is not where most of the people in the Democrat Party are. And I think that we clearly saw that. We saw them sort of rally around Joe Biden. And I think the other great sort of lead up story to what we saw was the dropping out of Pete Buttigieg and Amy right. Klobuchar. And I think that in a different scenario, there was a scenario where perhaps Bloomberg would have dropped out to get behind Joe Biden. But I think he felt like, I spent $500 million. I haven't had one chance for people to vote on me. Let's just see how it goes. But I think it will also be, you know, for Democrats, to given to his credit, that he got out and that no doubt he's going to put a lot of that infrastructure and money behind Joe Biden as well. But I think at the end of the day, when you look at the Democrat Party and, you know, their future, so much of that is going to depend on, obviously, the general election. And yeah. if it is Joe Biden, let's just say in that scenario, and if he gets beaten by President Trump, and Democrats will be, you know, very, very upset, obviously, in that scenario, because their whole goal is to beat President Trump. Then, you know, then I think you'll see another reevaluation period, because it will be the second time that they lost to this person that they say is, you know, unfit to be president and
right.
all the rest.
Well, I kind of feel like, and I could be just not quite in tune with everything, but I kind of feel like that maybe there's even a little bit of quiet resignation within the chattering class. So people you and I know in the media and some of the party leadership and so forth, that even if they lose to Trump this cycle, by not giving it over to Bernie, they at least mm-hmm. preserve something of a semblance of traditional order, whatever that may be. You know,
yeah.
I'm center right. This is not my party. It's really not my fight. But I think that there's
That's true.
Did you think that Texas was going to be as close as it turned out to be down the stretch?
You know, I think it's interesting that Texas was very close. And I think that, you know, Texas is sort of, there's always all this discussion about Texas and is it changing?
How long will it be Republican? Yeah.
Purple, how long will it be Republican? And, you know, I think Texas is obviously a very interesting state to watch. Karl Rove was on our panel last night, so he was a great, you know, voice on this always. And I remember when Beto O'Rourke was running and it looked like he might beat Ted Cruz all along. You know, Carl just shook his head. No, not going to happen. Not going to happen. I mean, you know, when you talk about gun rights and you talk about issues, even life issues in Texas, I think that in many ways, you know, there's probably some strength there for someone like Joe Biden, even though he is a little bit squishy on
yeah.
those issues. I
yeah.
think that they feel like he's not going to push them quite as far as perhaps a Bernie Sanders or even a Mike Bloomberg would in that front.
Well, what do you make of the fact that the gaffe machine that Biden has been for the last number of weeks, because Bernie kind of took the lead, he was largely shielded from a lot of really harsh criticism.
Yeah.
They are almost even in delegates. I think as of right this very minute that we're talking, Biden has like 40 more delegates than Bernie. But I kind of sense the spotlight's going to go back to Joe, and he's going to have
sure.
to answer for some of this stuff. And even the late night shows are probably going to have some fun at it. How big of a deal do you think it is that he seems to be disoriented a lot?
Well, I think, you know, he's been sort of protected by this large group of Democrats running.
Yeah.
And also the notion that he was just going to fizzle out. I mean, that's what everybody thought.
Yeah, Bernie
right?
became the heat shield.
He's not going to make it. Joe Biden's not going to be the guy. So he is going to have all the slings and arrows pointed in his direction. You and mark my words, from Republicans and from the president, you're going to start hearing a whole lot more once again about Burisma, about Hunter Biden, about all these issues that sort of softened up a little bit over the past several weeks when
right.
it looked like this was heading in another direction, is all going to be aimed squarely at Joe Biden. Now, his gaffes are built in, I think, for most people in terms it's just Joe being Joe. And not far be it for me to, you know, assess anybody's mental capability. That's, you know, way above my pay grade. So, but, you know, people are looking at it. And if it becomes evident that it's something more than just that, more than the gaffes that everybody sort of has, you know, known and some people have loved over all these years, then I think there's going to be some scrutiny there.
Yeah.
And he will be much more under the spotlight now. I mean, when they have the debates, it's just going to be him and Bernie. Everybody's
yeah.
going to be looking at the two of them. And then,
or if he survives to the general, then it's going to be him and Trump.
Yeah, it's going to be Trump and Biden on that stage. And that's a pretty, you know, that's like, you know, what I would call a double black diamond.
You
know, I mean, that's dangerous territory.
Over the course of the last few months, there has been widespread belief among pundits and politicos that Bernie Sanders would be an easier opponent for President Trump to beat in November. Charlie Kirk, the founder of Turning Point USA, has a different take. He joined my program on Super Tuesday.
Someone who watches this stuff argues about these very principles on college campuses. And if you're not already following his social media, you owe it to yourself to, if nothing else, go to Twitter and follow Charlie Kirk. He is one of the most courageous guys in political debate today because he just sometimes sits on a chair and engages people that are on the college campus, being filled and pumped up with a lot of stuff that, you know, the parents didn't give them. Where they got it from, you know, God only knows. But he's talking common sense. And his new book, The MAGA Doctrine, The Only Ideas That Will Win the Future, he returns to Kevin McCullough Radio. Charlie, it's good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, honored to be here. Thanks so much.
What will we learn when these 14 states have weighed in?
Well, look, I think we'll learn that Mike Bloomberg is probably the worst politician in American history. He was going to spend $700 million and really disrupt the presidential race, but he's uniquely unappealing. And because of that, we're seeing the kind of resuscitation of Joe Biden. You know, 2 weeks ago, I think Joe Biden was looking at Sotheby's catalogs, trying to pick out what beach house he was going to buy with the cash that Hunter Biden got from sitting on the Ukrainian gas board. And now all of a sudden we're looking at some form of a potential Biden comeback, which as a Trump supporter, I'm thrilled about. I would much rather run up against Biden than Bernie. I know that might put me in the minority of opinion, but I'd much rather run up against corruption than free. I think free stuff is a harder thing to run up against than a guy that doesn't know what state he's in, a guy that doesn't know what day the contest is, guy that doesn't know the talk show he's talking about or doesn't even know created by the thing. Yeah, that's great,
right,
Joe. He's going to be in the candidate equivalent of the witness protection program where they try to not have him do enough of, you know, many events. And I would love to run up against that. He is Hillary Clinton 2.0. In fact, he's the most corrupt vice president in American history. I would embrace that. And Donald Trump then could truly run as the outsider, as an incumbent, which is his best tone, his best appeal to the American people. No more status quo politics. I'm going to keep on delivering results. Look, again, I think Bernie's a tougher matchup. He would boost turnout. He'd get people excited. No one's excited to vote for Joe Biden. They reluctantly endorse him. They reluctantly show up to his rallies and reluctantly show up to what he's doing. He doesn't know what state he's in. He doesn't know what day it is. He doesn't even know what country the son's board is sitting on that he's selling out our country for. I'm half kidding about that. But look, he's an unbelievably corrupt individual. The ruling class has exploited the citizenry of our country for so long. Bernie, to your point, is a good intellectual matchup for the future of our country, because that's really where we're headed. I agree with you on that. However,
well, when you look at Ilhan Omar and AOC and that generation of legislator and the people that
came in
18.
Yeah, but there's no guarantee we win that argument. There's no guarantee. And I know that you might disagree with that. In fact, I think that, you know, America is not as capitalistic as people give it credit for. I deal with this every single day on college campuses.
Right.
They can boost turnout in the core constituencies. We're in trouble. And if they can continue to grow and solidify their support. I know for certain that on college campuses, Joe Biden would have no energy, no
right.
enthusiasm. In fact, Donald Trump could do record numbers on college campuses against Joe Biden. It would be a disaster for them, which I would love. And again, the one thing the American people know is that our American system is rotten. The American political system ruled by the elites is rotten to the core because of corruption. No one embodies that to a worse extent than Joe Biden.
Coming up, abortion before the high court.
The state of Louisiana is arguing that abortion clinics and abortion doctors should not be recognized to have what is called third-party standing to sue states for restrictions on abortion.
The Christian Outlook returns in a moment. Stay with us. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Christian Outlook, brought to you in partnership with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. I'm Kevin McCullough. Abortion was before the nation's highest court this week, and to say that abortion is a hot-button issue for leading Democrats today is an understatement. But what we saw from Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer was alarming. Speaking from outside the Supreme Court, he threatened two of the Supreme Court justices.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind and you will pay the price.
It prompted a very rare rebuke from Chief Justice Roberts. He said, and I quote, "Justices know that criticism comes with the territory. But threatening statements of this sort from the highest levels of government are not only inappropriate, they are dangerous. All members of the court will continue to do their job without fear or favor from whatever quarter." Thank you, Chief Justice. For context on the case inside the court, here's Albert Mohler from his briefing program.
the first big abortion case coming before the Supreme Court since the confirmation of Justices Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch, is going to be argued before the court. The case is known as June Medical Services v. Russo, and it comes from the state of Louisiana, and it comes with enormous potential and with a good many questions about how the court will rule on this question of abortion. But there are basically two questions here. Both of them are important, but one of them arises now before the Supreme Court for the very first time. To set the stage for this case before the nation's highest court, we have to go back to the year 2014 when Louisiana passed a law that requires abortion clinics to have physicians who are recognized with admitting privileges at local hospitals. A similar law that was passed in Texas was struck down by the federal courts and eventually also by the Supreme Court as an unconstitutional infringement on a woman's right to abortion, as it has been called. But the case is now coming from Louisiana, and even though in this aspect it comes as basically the same kind of law, it faces a new court, and it also faces a continuing public conversation about abortion and a very interesting and indeed insidious argument coming from the pro-abortion side. The pro-abortion side argues that if a woman really has a constitutional right to abortion, then she must have a constitutional right to access to abortion. This is a very deadly logic. Now, just to take an example, if we are talking about the Second Amendment when it comes to a citizen's right to own firearms, no one really believes that that requires that there be a firearm store every few miles or according to whatever distribution of the population. The right to bear arms is quite different than a right to demand a gun store. But when it comes to abortion, abortion rights activists have been pressing for decades now the argument that a theoretical constitutional right to abortion is meaningless if there is no abortion clinic or abortion provider that is at close access to a woman. But the second aspect of this case coming before the court is an issue that has never arisen in this context before. The state of Louisiana is arguing that abortion clinics and abortion doctors should not be recognized to have what is called third-party standing to sue states and other legal jurisdictions for restrictions on abortion as if they are acting on behalf of women seeking abortions. That is absolutely crucial. For decades now, the federal courts have acted as if abortion doctors have third-party standing to sue, charging that state restrictions on abortion are unconstitutional. The cases are not brought by women seeking abortions. That would be very cumbersome. Those challenges would be far fewer working their way through the courts. But instead, they have been made by doctors, groups of doctors, and most importantly, abortion clinics. The lawyers for the state of Louisiana are arguing that abortion providers should not be granted this third-party standing because they are acting in their own interest rather than in the interest of women who might be seeking an abortion. It is a straightforward argument. It's an incredibly important argument.
Concerns over coronavirus continue to grow as 95,000 individuals plus have been diagnosed with the virus. In the U.S., we have over 150 cases with 10 fatalities to date. John Hall and Kathy Emmons turned to A.J. Roberts, a scientist serving with the ministry Reasons to Believe. They spoke on WORD-FM in Pittsburgh.
Dr. Roberts, last time you were with us, you talked about your time at the NIH studying the SARS virus. And
right.
I didn't know that before you brought that up on the air. And so I guess my question for you is, has anything happened with this coronavirus that is a surprise to you?
That's a great question. I think that the spread is a little bit more noteworthy than
okay.
we saw for SARS. Over 90,000 people are now infected. That's over 10 times the amount that were infected at the end of the SARS outbreak. And we're not yet at the end of what they're now calling SARS-2, the SARS-2 outbreak. We're still very much at the beginning. So even if it's seasonal, we still probably have, a few more months to go.
So there's no end in sight, right? Because this thing feels as though it's growing. And, of course, whether our confidence was false confidence or not, it's made its way to the United States. So we can see worse before we see better.
That's true. I don't want to be, anybody that's trying to say this is going to get a lot worse. I think it has the potential to get worse. But I also think that we can't always predict. You know, we don't really have a crystal ball to be able to predict what a virus is going to do in different environments. We don't know how successful our interventions will be once we're able to detect where the virus is and take precautions. But like we talked about the last time I was on the show, there are some things that you can do, including, you know, wash your hands thoroughly for 30 seconds with warm soapy water. Use Clorox wipes to decontaminate surfaces and things to that effect. So we can take precautions, but I think we just need to keep an eye on the situation. I've heard many people say that, you know, it's no worse than the flu. There are a lot of similarities between this virus and the flu virus, but there are a lot of dissimilarities too, and I think we covered some of those. I think that it's certainly got the potential to be far worse than the flu. But for most people who are under the age of 50 and who are in general good health, if they were actually to contract this virus, the symptoms that they face might be very similar to a case of the flu.
So, Dr. Roberts, the media frenzy around this, and I believe it is a frenzy, is sort of indicative of the age we live in, right? I mean, it's in many ways, I believe it's fueled by social media. The cable channels don't have a whole lot to talk about. So there is this thing that becomes larger than life. And I think this is probably a perfect storm of all those elements moving together.
Yes, I think that's true. But again, let's go back to the flu and just do one more comparison with the flu. Last week, I think there were at the peak of the flu season thus far, which was in week four of the year, so the end of January, we had in 1 week in the U.S. we had 400 deaths attributed to the flu. And so, if this is currently coming in at a mortality rate of about 10 to 20%, the typical flu season, and right now we're in a sort of high flu season, but not an epidemic flu season, right? So we're still within the low range of flu. You're talking 10 to 20 times that number. If we had 4,000 to 8,000 deaths in 1 week in the U.S. attributed to the coronavirus, people would be rightly concerned, right? And so, yes, there is this sense of, oh my gosh, we've got to panic. We don't need to panic. You know, oh my gosh, this is the worst thing that we've encountered. It's nowhere as serious as Ebola, as I'm sure you've heard many people say in many different venues. But this seems to have a fairly high rate of human-to-human transmission. And for people over the age of 50 with comorbidities, other diseases, it is a very serious health threat.
Coming up.
My friend says, Pat, everybody's talking about you wearing that mask. You must be afraid of the virus.
More on coronavirus when the Christian Outlook returns in a moment.
I'd like to talk to you for a moment about ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. You've seen how your freedom is under attack. But if you act now, you can protect your family today and for generations to come. Go to ChristianOutlook.com to find out how you can join Alliance Defending Freedom to help ensure that the opponents of freedom don't dictate your future. That's ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to The Christian Outlook, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. I'm Calvin McCullough. When we talk about the source and the origins of the coronavirus, we point to China. And China, we know, is both secretive and authoritarian. Our next guest served there for over a decade and was in the country as the concerns over the virus were quickly developing. Patricia Premick provides a gripping look inside China and the origins of this virus. She was in studio with John Hall and Kathy Emmons.
The coronavirus has taken over the imagination of everybody I know.
Yeah.
And there's a ton of legitimate fear, and there's a ton of just amped up emotion, and it's impossible to tell when you've crossed the line, right?
But you've been there,
right,
and done that.
But you were there, you were in country at the time that this all started, so yeah. I'm anxious to hear what it was like from a Chinese perspective. This was the epicenter. Mm-hmm. Tell us.
Well, fortunately, to this very day, I don't know anybody with the virus.
Great.
Praise God. So the Wuhan is the epicenter. Every year before Spring Festival, there's a big potluck. They had that potluck on January 18th. They got permission. Beijing knew about it. Wuhan officials knew about it, gave them the okay to have it. You want to guess how many people were together for that potluck? 40,000 people.
All sharing utensils, plates, cups, bowls.
40,000 people. So it's potluck, so everybody brings their sure. dishes. So almost 14,000 dishes. But just even being together, right? January 28th. By January 23rd, they locked down the city.
So the government knew that it was a major issue before then.
While the potluck was going on.
Didn't oh, yeah. see a need to stop the potluck.
Right. Because they did not want to create panic. But you knew something was happening.
Right.
So January 23rd, they lock down Wuhan. I'd never even heard of Wuhan.
It was so far away.
Right. Right?
Not part of your world.
No. So January 23rd, I'm with my, we call each other family. I'm with my Chinese family going to her hometown. We're in a private car. Normally we would have taken a train. Praise God. And we see on the news that they've locked down this city for a virus. And we're like, what is going on? And so we're in a village, okay? So we're talking in the village where there's no heat. I'm in a concrete building. We have solar-powered water heater, so no warm showers in the morning. There's no Wi-Fi. So we're hanging out there. And the first day, we went into the village market to get our vegetables. And I wore a mask because it was blowing dust on the kind of the dirt road. And my friend says, Pat, everybody's talking about you wearing that mask. You must be afraid of the virus. So an hour outside of your city, they talk a different dialect. So I don't understand their dialect. They don't understand each other's dialect, right? And so I'm like, I'm really just wearing it because of the dust. The next time, everybody was wearing a mask and they were actually all sold out. Okay, so we're finding out that something is going on. My friend from America gives me this website by Johns Hopkins University that's publishing this information. So every day, we're looking at this app and seeing the cases. And on January 29th, we were supposed to have, her sister had gotten married, and we were going to have in their hometown a wedding dinner. And I'm like, I don't think we should do this.
Right.
And she says, yeah, my mom and I just talked about this. We don't think we should do this either. And then the local mayor comes around and says, no large get-togethers. That's all you do during Spring Festival is have large get-togethers. You literally go from house to house and have meals together. Well, you're not doing that. We found out in the midst of this, 7 people came into our village from Wuhan. So we weren't getting a lot of information from the Chinese side at that point. And so on that app, you can then click and see the different localities. And so I clicked on our city of Chengdu. And my friend says, yeah, that's not right. I said, how do you know? Because we have friends who are doctors there. That's not accurate.
Okay, so then at what point did you realize this is serious? I better make some plans.
Well, so at that point, I knew that I was leaving the country, but my ticket was out March 25th.
This was pre-planned.
This was pre-planned, literally just the middle of January. But I knew I was leaving the country. God had been preparing me for this over the last 2 years.
I see.
His presence and direction has been amazing, right? And so I'm sitting here saying, something serious is going on. And we're talking about, are we even going to be able to be allowed back into our city? Or are they locking that down? Because we don't know how far this is going to go, what's happening. And so we're debating January 29th, January 31st, because we're just watching these numbers inch up. And they're like, well, Pat, it's really bad today. So let's not leave on Wednesday. Let's wait till Friday. I said, guys, it doesn't matter when we leave. It does not matter. This is not getting better. Mm-hmm. These numbers are not going to go down. And I pushed them to leave on Wednesday. Praise God. When we were driven down, our day of driving was gorgeous. That night it had snowed. The next day, that road was blocked. I'm like, wow, God, thank you. So we leave on Wednesday. Hours later, blocked. That road is blocked. They are not letting anyone, in or out of the village.
Coming up, the Chinese crackdown.
By law, technically, they are allowed to have a faith. But since 2018, it is oppression for everybody.
When the Christian Outlook returns in a moment. Stay with us. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to The Christian Outlook, brought to you in partnership with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. I'm Kevin McCullough. In recent years, we've noticed a shift in China. Over the course of the last few decades, we've all known that they are communist, but as many who have worked there describe, there was at least a certain measure of freedom. But things have changed, perhaps more dramatically than you and I have recognized. Patricia Premick described the situation in her conversation with John and Kathy on WORD-FM in Pittsburgh.
Let me ask you if the people you talked to about the Tiananmen Square incident knew about it.
They did not. It is whitewashed. And you don't dare Google it. You can't Google it. That's right. Blocked. You cannot search for it. Otherwise, you will probably have a knock on your door. Why are you searching for that? Or you'll be blocked. You'll be censored.
So how careful then were you? I mean, did you feel pressure? Did you feel watched? Did you feel fearful at any time?
Particularly when I was working for the university, I thought, of course, you were not ever allowed to evangelize from the platform. If people asked you questions, you could answer. But I still felt, boy, if I answer the wrong person at the wrong time, I could get in trouble, because universities are a massive ground for recruiting for the Communist Party. Most students are a member of the Communist Party because that's just what you do. It's also a part of where you get your jobs. And so even back then, and that was 2012 to 2014, but Xi Jinping has always been a hardline Mao follower, always. Now he had lifetime appointment. And it started that the Communist Party was literally going back to the Mao era of, we are going to control all of civil society. Mm-hmm. Things used to happen that, oh, somebody that you never knew, never heard of, had some problem somewhere out there. And now it was everybody, everywhere, about everything. Wow. It was, you will bow down to the Communist Party. And Xi Jinping himself, in his own words, said, you do not need God. Hmm. You only need the Communist Party. You will pray to the Communist Party, take down God, put my picture on that mantle.
And you watched this evolution happen.
Right. And we felt it. We felt that pressure coming on the missionaries. People started being interrogated. People started getting kicked out with 48-hour notice.
Because they were Christians. Talk about worshiping at a house church. How secretive was that? How did that work in your life? And were you fearful to worship in a house church?
I didn't go often. Some of the groups absolutely forbid me from going. Mm-hmm. They said
because you were American?
Because I was foreigner and they could track me. It's easier to find me.
Right.
And so then I'm going to lead them.
Sure.
To the church.
You're the fox in the hen house.
Right, because these are churches, and most of the workers, you know, they work on Sunday, right? So these people work all, you know, all the time. And so a bunch of Chinese people going into an office building doesn't look any different.
Right.
A foreigner going into an office building on a Sunday morning looks different. And so they said, it's too dangerous for you and us. So a lot of my friends said, you're never allowed to come. Others would say, yeah, you can come. And so it might be, you know, in somebody's apartment most times. And so anywhere from 10 to 20. There are other places that had a whole floor where they had a couple of hundred people gathering together on a Sunday. Well, in our city, those are all shut down. And they started, the police started coming. Well, guess what? The police were coming. So guess what? The police were coming and listening to the message, too.
Right.
And so, in general, they weren't harming the people. They were taking pictures of them. You had to register. But then there were other situations in our city. There's a very famous church called Early Rain. Early Rain has had 100 people arrested at a time. Currently, they have an elder who's been, he's now sentenced to 4 years in jail. And his crime was that he printed tracts. The pastor, the lead pastor, has been jailed now. They've committed him to 9 years and for nothing other than you lead a church because you are subverting the communist government.
And you have no response back, right? No due process.
No. No. Right. In fact, the elder thought he was going to be released that day. And not only was he not released, he was then sentenced to 4 years.
Immediately to jail.
Yes.
We've seen photographs of the Chinese authorities with bulldozers knocking down churches.
Right.
Mega churches. I mean, some small.
Those would be government churches that they approved to be built, right? Because you wouldn't get it otherwise. And those are government churches.
And they've changed their mind.
They changed their mind.
And they don't have to tell you ahead of time and they don't have to tell you why.
No.
And you don't have any
by law,
right to complain.
By law, technically, they are allowed to have a faith. But since 2018, it is oppression for everybody. Of course, it was against Tibetans before. Of course, it was then against the Uyghur Muslims. Then it's against the Christians. It's the foreigners. It's the missionaries. It's everybody who's not professing to be a communist party. Mm-hmm. And now they're going to my friends' companies and saying, you have to sign this document and say that you're going to follow the communist party. Because everybody's just like, oh, whatever. But now, yeah, there's a lot of oppression and everything. Mm-hmm. And this is a government who is able to control people with all of their facial recognition. By 2022, they will have 2.9 billion cameras. Two cameras for every person.
And everyone on file.
And everyone on file.
Wow.
I mean, in my own complex, I had those discipleship meetings in my apartment until they put cameras in my complex. And now in 200 steps, eight cameras will catch me walking by. For some of these complexes, and this was before the coronavirus, when you went to the gate, you had to show your ID, which was passport or the Chinese ID, and say, who are you here to visit? They want to know who you're visiting.
Were there moments when you thought, I have got to get out of here?
Yeah, that was actually the summer of 2018. I was in, you know, when you have culture stress, you always have culture stress. Mm-hmm. Okay, so regardless of how long you've been in a country, how familiar you are with the culture, it's still not your home culture. And you feel that stress. And there are times when it goes really high and it goes really low. And my I can tell when I'm high when I'm yelling at cars, right? And I'm like, okay, I got to get out of here. And so I'm not only with an agency, I'm with a denomination. And so our denomination, Evangelical Presbyterian Church, has conferences every couple of years. And I was in Greece and I needed to get out of the country. And I needed to be in a place of quiet and beauty. And it was there where people recommended a sabbatical. It was there when my regional leaders who had been kicked out of another country said, Pat, if the government says you're done, you're done. And as simple as that is, that brought a sense of peace to me. Mm. You were completely out of control and completely dependent on God to keep you safe, to keep you hidden, to keep your friends hidden. I mean, there are people who are trying to turn you in. Spy in my discipleship group. At any moment, you know, you could be done.
Coming up, communism, a crackdown, and coronavirus. The toll of it all.
There started to be a lot of rumors in early 2018 of things starting to clamp down. I started to have fear.
When the Christian Outlook returns in a moment. Welcome back to The Christian Outlook. I'm Kevin McCullough. What we're seeing develop in China is a surveillance state that makes all previous efforts at widespread surveillance of massive segments of urban populations look small and petty. It's not strange that this would put an emotional and spiritual toll on those who served there. Once again, Patricia Premick with John Hall and Kathy Emmons.
Pat, I'm curious about the increasing level of governmental control that you saw when you lived there over the 11 years. When I was listening to your stories, I was wondering if that were me, how it would change me, how it would change how I think or what I write or what I say to the person next to me. Can you talk about that?
Well, and the sadness of leaving a country literally within 25 hours, because I kept moving that airline ticket up from March 25th to February 10th to the next day.
I see.
And so now I can't talk with my friends. I can't say goodbye. I did have dinner with my Chinese family, but it was increasingly difficult because, like I said, those discipleship meetings happened in my home. Well, we can't be seen together in my home.
But it wasn't that way when you started the discipleship group.
Oh, my goodness, no. I mean, I was in a sweet spot for a very, very long time. I loved my ministry there. I loved my friends there. The professional work when I was in management consulting was a great fit. And so it was a rich, rich life. Mm. It wasn't my intention even 2 years ago to leave the country. This was God's idea, and I was shocked when he said, you're leaving. And that was 2 years ago in preparing me for this. But when you're in your complex and you just meet a neighbor and you reposition yourself to, like, you look to where the cameras are and you're like, let's change our direction so
really?
Nobody can read our lips. When you ride your scooter and see the cameras everywhere.
When did that start?
About in the last 2 years.
Really? With the deep, hard lifetime appointment of President Xi, everything altered.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so did it change your thoughts? Did it change the kinds of things you wrote or the kinds of ways that you interacted with friends?
And your prayer life.
There started to be a lot of of rumors in early 2018 of things starting to clamp down. And so you started to feel that stress. Mm. And I started to have fear. And there's also a very, very strong defiance rising up in me. I'm still processing that. Is this me as an American, collectivism versus individualism? Is this Christian versus communism? Is it just all of it wrapped together? And just, I don't respond well to fear and threat. Mm-hmm. You know, the fight or the flight?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to fight, and that could get me in some serious trouble.
Yeah.
And so the pressure that was coming on us, and I'm not sure that our Chinese friends actually understood what it's like for foreigners at first, because we are guests in their country, and I have always been above board with legal, with all of my documents. Every time I leave the country, I'm ultra legal. But now there's just these threats coming, and you feel it. And living under that amount of pressure and stress was incredible.
This wraps up this edition of The Christian Outlook. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Google Play, and never miss these and other great conversations. Start at ChristianOutlook.com. Thanks for joining us today. Our program has been brought to you in part through the partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. For executive producer Russell Shubin and producers Charlie Richards and David Posehn, Mike Cook, and Alex Garrett, I'm Kevin McCullough. Join us again next time for The Christian Outlook. She is spectacular.